It's Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, an infectious disease doctor gives us some advice after the overturning of a federal public transportation mask mandate. First, the return to full-time in-person learning for students this year has brought more behavioral issues in some districts. At the start of the school year, the Madison School District saw a sharp rise in behavioral referrals for fighting in its high schools, according to an analysis by the Wisconsin State Journal. And some districts around the country have reported similar numbers since the fall compared to pre-pandemic years. It's not clear how widespread that trend is, given that there's no statewide or nationwide data. But the reports from some districts are raising concerns about safety and the way students are readjusting to in-person learning. Our guest today is here to help us better understand the ways that students respond to anger and how to help them process their emotions more effectively and peacefully. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you work in a school district? Are you seeing more fights or other behavior problems in your schools this year? Are students acting out more in general? What do you think is driving that? If you're a parent or a student yourself, what are you seeing? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Ryan Martin is a professor of psychology and associate dean for the College of Arts, Humanities, and Social Sciences at the UW-Green Bay. His research focuses on healthy and unhealthy expressions of anger. You can follow his work at alltheragescience.com. Ryan, welcome back to Central Time.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
Does it surprise you that we're hearing from at least some schools that they're seeing more fights and behavioral problems from students since the return to in-person learning?
It does not surprise me much at all. I don't know that I would have anticipated the problem being as severe as it seems to be, but I do think that we're seeing more anger just generally across a variety of contexts. And so I think to me that there are some things that might be unique to the school situation, but overall, I think this is really a symptom of a much broader anger problem that we're seeing right now in the United States and maybe elsewhere as well.
Before we dig deeply into schools and the teenage years and anger, what do you see driving that wider trend toward us being more angry?
I think there are a lot of factors at play right now. I think, stress over the pandemic and the uncertainties that stem from that are still very present for people. And I think that stress is making it more likely for people to snap at times. I think the fact that we are still, we've relatively recently had a very, very divisive election, and one that I think, all elections have been divisive, but I think this one didn't go away. Right, that there is still a lot of discussion about it. There's still a lot of questions about sort of what's going to happen next with the upcoming elections. I think we're in a very divisive political time that tends to be driving a lot of negativity and a lot of frustration. And I think a lot of the kind of economic and other types of uncertainty that we're living in right now is maybe encouraged a level of competitiveness amongst people that is driving anger.
Now, diving back into schools, those factors are there for everybody. They're there for teenagers. And on its own, being a teenager can be a tough time to live through without all that stuff you just mentioned. Are people at that high school age particularly vulnerable to those things that can drive more anger?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there are a lot of things about being a teenager that are particularly challenging that can lead to anger. And so, for starters, we have a lot of the developmental elements, the physiological developmental changes associated with puberty that can lead to increased emotionality in general. We also have the fact that parts of the brain associated with impulse control are not fully developed yet. So we've got this situation where there's a lot of stress, a lot of anxiety, a lot of emotionality, and some, I guess, poor impulse control. And I think that, all of those things sort of build into this perfect storm that lead to fights and other forms of aggression.
Now, fighting in schools isn't new. There were fights, in my junior high, in my high school, but not infrequently, I'll say, not all the time. Have we learned lessons about creating school environments that help to prevent that? Are there things we should be trying that you think about?
Yeah, I think, you know, the impulse oftentimes is to punish, and that is what a lot of people will say. And it's not that I don't believe in accountability, I do, but I'm not sure that, you know, stricter rules are necessarily going to get us there. I think most teenagers know that fighting is against the rules and that a punishment will ensue, and I don't think that stops them in the moment. I think one of the things that we can do to limit fighting is to start recognizing those conflict and tension states before they happen. And that a lot of fights very rarely happen out of nowhere, where it's just two strangers who start fighting. That does happen, but that isn't the primary, the most common. I think oftentimes what we see is that there's a buildup. And I think that being able to recognize that buildup, being able to identify some of the signs there, and then intervene earlier can be really helpful. And I think even when they are somewhat spontaneous, even when they do happen among strangers, there's still some tension prior to that from the parties involved. And if we can do a good job of identifying that and moderating and mediating that, I think we're going to be in better shape.
We're talking to Ryan Martin, psychology professor at UW Green Bay, looking at reports from some school districts of an increased number of fights and other behavioral problems since in-person schooling started, and more general issues of anger and anger management for teenagers and the rest of us. You can join in with your thoughts, your questions, maybe your experiences in a school this year at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Ryan, for parents, are there things they can do to help give their kids, I don't know, like a toolkit to take their anger and not use it in harmful ways?
Yeah, I think, again, the impulse is sometimes to punish here. And I think that, again, I get the need for accountability, but I also think that focusing on a few other approaches is going to be really important. So first is, I think, modeling. I think one of the best things parents can do is demonstrate for their kids how to appropriately handle anger. And so, not yelling themselves, not being aggressive themselves, finding ways to just stay in control in front of their kids and to their kids can go a long way. I also think it's important to identify that anger when it happens, and not to send the messages to kids that the emotion itself is the problem. I think that there are a lot of good reasons for kids to be feeling frustrated right now. I think they have come off an extraordinarily stressful couple of years. There's been a lot of anxiety and a lot of worry. And so to not minimize the feelings, to acknowledge those feelings can go a long way to helping kids learn to deal with anger. And then help them channel those feelings into more productive, positive solutions. So if you've got a child who is angry about something, teaching them to have an assertive conversation and even maybe sort of role-playing ways of handling that, all of those can be good, healthy ways of dealing with anger at home.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Tim is with us in Wausau. Tim, hi. Tim is not with us in Wausau. Maybe you can call back in, Tim, at 800-642-1234. Ryan, something I've talked to you about a time or three, I think a lot of people might look at a solution to anger being express it, vent it, punch pillows and that sort of thing. This is something I think you push back on a lot.
Yeah, that myth is so prominent, we even have a name for it. It's called the catharsis myth, and it's the belief that punching pillows and punching bags and going to rage rooms and releasing, quote unquote, our anger those ways is going to be a good way to deal with it. And every piece of data we have says that, no, that's not effective. In fact, it makes us angrier. It makes us more likely to be aggressive in those provoking moments. And so I think moving away from those approaches and trying to channel it into more productive approaches is really valuable.
We're talking to UW Green Bay psychology professor Ryan Martin about student fights at schools, some districts reporting an increase compared to pre-pandemic, and how teenagers are dealing with emotions and with conflict since returning to full-time in-person learning. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Why do you think this is happening, at least in some districts? Do you have a firsthand look at these issues in a school? Are you seeing this? Are you not seeing this where you are? What are your questions about how we deal with anger or your own solutions? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation about how the pandemic has affected the way students process emotions and conflict, with some districts saying they're seeing more fights and other behavioral concerns in schools now compared to pre-pandemic numbers. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts on that, your perspectives, if you're seeing it in your local school as a student, a parent, a teacher, administrator. Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Patty is with us in Green Bay. Patty, hello.
Hi, I am a teacher in a local school district, and I can tell you that I'm absolutely seeing this, and it is my impression that it's being very much underreported because I don't think they want people to really know how bad things are.
Patty, is it affecting your ability to teach, do you think?
It's affecting my ability to even just be in the building. It's actually dangerous for me, and I don't feel safe.
Patty, and can I ask what age range you teach? Are you at a high school?
At a lower grade, and that's all I would be willing to say.
Gotcha. Patty, thank you for calling in and sharing that. Ryan, you know, if this is interfering with the education, making teachers feel unsafe, I don't know. Do you think we're taking this seriously enough?
Yeah, I have grave concerns about where things are at for a variety of reasons. I mean, we've focused on the safety of students right now, but I think also focusing on the safety and well-being of teachers. You know, this is happening within the context of teachers who appear to be leaving the profession in high numbers, or at least considering leaving the profession in high numbers. And this has to add to that. And so my sense is that we need to be taking this seriously for a whole lot of reasons. I would also add that I wonder the degree to which the inadequate or potentially inadequate resources of schools might be playing a role here too. We know that when kids have good, positive relationships with their teachers, they're less likely to engage in some of the types of aggression we're talking about. And, you know, I think higher class sizes mean it's harder to develop those relationships.
Patty, thanks for calling in. We'll go next to Leo in Milton. Leo, hi.
Hi there. I'm a current senior in high school, so I kind of got a chance to see, you know, before COVID, high school, during, and after. And I think it's a really stark difference with how, like, especially the underclassmen are, like, with how they act and, like, acting out. I can really see how, like, the COVID experience has changed, like, teenagers' minds internally and almost, like, set many of them back.
Leo, do you feel like you made the adjustment okay? I assume you had some time out of school and you're back in now. How did it go for you personally, if I may ask?
Yeah, I mean, I think it went well for me just because I had that, you know, freshman year before COVID. So I got that chance at like a real high school experience before COVID started, which I think without that, it would not have been as good as it is now. So I think I really got lucky. Yeah, with that, like my friends underclassmen are like, I can tell they're struggling with the transition to high school, even as like sophomores.
Interesting. Leo, thank you so much for sharing that perspective. Ryan, I mean, people talk about, you know, kids having a lost year or lost couple of years, and it can be hard to come back from that.
Yeah, I think that was a really important point made, and I'm thankful for the call. I think that we have to remember that, you know, a year and a half, if that's, which for many students, that's about what this was, a year and a half in of high school or of school is a pretty significant portion of your educational time. And it's going to impact not just the academic learning, but the social learning as well. And I think that that is undoubtedly playing a role. And I think it's probably playing a role in the broader context of anger right now as well, that people just are a little bit out of practice. It's not just the stress, it's the minimal human interaction over the last few years. And so I think that's definitely relevant.
Leo, thanks again for calling in and sharing that. Aaron joins us now in Neenah. Aaron, hello.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I am a high school teacher, and I especially work with students that are, you know, teen parents and high risk. I have seen a lot of students complaining or coming to me saying that their needs just can't be met at home right now. You know, we have a lot of parents that their job never quite recovered. They're not quite making what they were before the pandemic. Food prices are really high. Rent prices are really high. Gas prices are really high. So these kids have not just gone through, you know, the year and a half of pandemic, but now are dealing with, you know, we're supposedly through it or getting through it, and things still aren't better for them. They still don't have food. They still don't have support. So I understand where a lot of the frustration is coming from. I don't know how to help it, however. And I'm wondering how we can help not only the anger, but also the apathy that seems to be right alongside it.
Aaron, thanks a lot. A lot there, Ryan. What do you think?
Yeah, I think a lot of what the caller speaks to is some of what I identified at the beginning, which is, you know, I don't think that young people are worried about the economy the same way their parents are, but those economic factors I was talking certainly have an indirect and even direct impact on their life, the way the caller is describing. And, you know, that there's that if they're not having their basic needs met, if they are hungry and if they're not able to get enough sleep at night, or if they're not having a healthy relationship with their parents or their siblings, or there's a lot of stress at home, all of that influences how they are at school. And so that's, I think, undeniable that those things are sort of trickling into the classroom and making problems worse. You know, I think that it's hard to know what to do, because the solutions to many of those problems are political solutions. They aren't things that parents necessarily have the power to fix, or teachers necessarily have the power to fix, even though that's where we sort of put the pressure on and say, well, this is where we need to fix it. I don't think that's true. I think these are political factors.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Ryan Martin from UW Green Bay, psychology professor there, about anger, about some increased fights reported by some school districts around the state and the country. Let's go back to your calls now. Barry is with us in Madison. Barry, hi.
Good afternoon. I've got a comment and a question. First of all, ever since schools have begun, there's been fights in school. It's not new, but it certainly has increased in number. And second point is that all of us go through elementary school and we have one teacher primarily. And human beings have an absolute necessity to have relationships. But when we get to middle school, when kids are starting to move into puberty, all of a sudden each kid has 5, 6, 7 different teachers every day. Now, if we expect kids to develop relationships, it's very difficult to do that within our structure. And the last point is that when you factor in all of these social issues, putting 2,000 kids or 4,000 kids in a building is certainly not conducive to living. And my question is, how do we address that?
Barry, thanks for the call. Ryan, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm really intrigued by the idea and what the caller said about, you know, being able to build those relationships and have the same teacher throughout. You know, I understand there are practical barriers there, but I assume that some of those practical barriers can be addressed with. I agree. I mean, in the sense that I think that relationship building with students is a really important element here, and our system might not be set up perfectly for that. I also agree that the class size is relevant. I mean, I think the caller referenced building size, mm-hmm. and how many students are at a particular school. I would even localize that to say, I think that class size is relevant, that it becomes more complicated. The more kids you're going to have in a building, the more kids in a lunchroom, and the higher the student-teacher ratio, all of those things are going to drive the potential for conflict.
Thanks for that call, Barry. In just our last minute or so, Ryan, we've heard from one high school student. If there are others listening, what are your thoughts that you'd want to leave them with when it comes to dealing with the emotion that we all have, anger?
Yeah, I think that I would sort of implore kids to understand that the anger they're feeling might be absolutely justified. There are lots of things to be angry about. And a lot of times that anger isn't happening on its own. It's coming along with some sadness and some anxiety and some stress and a whole bunch of other complicated emotions. I think what I would encourage kids to do is to try and find ways to talk to caregivers, talk to teachers, to try and connect with people. I think that the isolation they've experienced has been causing a lot of this, and to try and find ways to connect with people on a deeper level. That is really difficult, hard work, and I congratulate them for their willingness to try. But I think that's where the solutions are going to come from right now.
Ryan, thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That's Ryan Martin, professor of psychology and associate dean for the College of Arts, Humanities, and Social Sciences at UW-Green Bay. Follow his work at alltheragescience.com. He was with us today looking at how social isolation during the pandemic might be affecting how students behave in schools, with some districts reporting more fights and other disruptions. Coming up after the news, a federal judge has overturned the mask mandate for planes, trains, buses, and other mass transit. An infectious disease doctor shares some thoughts on staying safe while traveling. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, the UW Varsity Band is bringing back its spring concert after missing 2 years because of the pandemic. We'll talk to the band director about what it means to be back in front of a live audience. Now on Monday, a federal judge in Florida overturned the federal mask mandate for public transportation, which the Biden administration had just extended to May 3rd. The Justice Department said it will appeal the decision if the CDC says the mandate is still necessary. But in the meantime, the TSA has stopped enforcing the mandate, and all major airlines in the U.S. have made masks optional. We're talking about the end of the federal transportation mask mandate, which extends to all mass transportation, including buses and trains. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you ready to stop wearing your mask on the bus or in airports or not? Do you feel safe going mask-free anywhere? What advice do you need on when to wear a mask or not? Call 800-642-1234. 1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Dr. Dan Shirley is an assistant professor in the Division of Infectious Disease at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Shirley, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
We know that COVID numbers have been down for the most part lately, nudging back up in terms of cases, deaths down under 500 per day for the first time. What do you think about the timing of ending this mandate and the impact it could have on the spread of the disease?
Like you mentioned, it's super positive that we're noticing less hospitalizations and less deaths from COVID. But we have noticed an increase in cases in the community. And even that is complicated because fewer people are getting kind of the reportable PCR testing and doing more home testing, which is a good thing in its own right. But I think in the setting of rising cases, we worry a little bit about decreasing some of the layers of protection, and that might lead to increased cases.
There are a couple different elements here. First of all, people might be wondering, am I personally safe if I wear a mask and everybody around me is unmasked, or I guess vice versa? From a personal health angle, I imagine as an infectious disease doctor, people ask you all the time, hey, when should I wear a mask? What is your current advice for people going on a bus, a plane, whatever?
The advice is about the same as it's been, in that, you know, there are a lot of different things to consider about whether you should mask. Your personal health, your risk for getting severe disease, that has to do with your immune system, and whether you have other medical conditions. But really, also, what sort of situation are you going into? Is it going to be crowded? Are there people there that are going to be masked or not masked? You don't know people's vaccine status. Really just the uncertainty of where you're going and how close together and how indoors people are going to be. And those situations still would be the recommended time to wear a mask. Obviously, that has become more complicated if we're talking about some of those places now not mandating masks. So now you are going into more situations with groups of people who are likely to be less masked overall.
That's
yes, your personal thought about a mask, now it's more important to wear a good mask more than ever.
That's from the individual health perspective. Now, on a public health angle, and people have said, I think since the beginning of COVID, part of why we want people to wear masks early on was not just to keep you from getting sick, but to slow the spread of the disease, to protect others, maybe others now who might be more vulnerable. What do you think about masking right now from a public health perspective?
Yeah, I think that part has gotten a little lost in the shuffle. And that's really how I think about it. This whole pandemic has transitioned a little bit into how do we protect the vulnerable? And one way you can do that is to wear a mask, not because you feel sick or you're worried about your own risk for COVID, but to protect other people. And really, that is a good way to think about going into public and these other situations that we're talking about, buses, trains, and planes. It's super important to consider that angle.
And these are vehicles that go from one place to another, bringing in people who are going from different places to different places. Is this a particular point of concern? You know, what we do when we're going from one place to another, is this a particular place of concern for the spread of disease?
Absolutely. I mean, I think everyone, almost everyone, has encountered take a trip, and then you come back and you get a cold. And that's kind of what we're talking about here, is these modes of transit, or just travel in general, are how respiratory viruses are spread. We've known that pre-COVID. Everyone has experienced that. Planes are, themselves have great ventilation while they're in the air, but, you know, while you're waiting for everybody to get on the plane, the ventilation's not great. Getting to the airport, traveling through the airport, standing in lines, those are the riskier times. Buses and subways, trains, those are much less ventilated overall. And those are really the concern when we're talking about removing mask mandates.
Talking to Dr. Dan Shirley from the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, infectious disease expert there, looking at the end, at least for now, after a court ruling of the federal mandate requiring people to wear masks on planes and buses and trains, anywhere where you're traveling with a bunch of people on the same vehicle. You could join in with your reactions to that ruling, your personal behavior. What are you going to do? Is it going to change now? Are you going to keep on wearing a mask or no? Call it at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts or your questions for our guest. That's 800-642-1234. Our reporter Rob Mentzer asked people in Wausau how they feel about their city there no longer requiring masks on public transit. Here is one person who favored keeping going with masks.
I think it made a lot of sense to keep the mask mandate for public transportation because, although our buses aren't very crowded, oftentimes airports, airplanes, buses, trains are quite crowded. So when people are stuck in close proximity, the risk of infection goes up. So it made sense to me.
Dr. Shirley, again, that's something we've heard from the beginning. A high point for transmission can be lots of people crowded in a limited amount of space.
Yes, it really is one of the major factors in spreading any infectious disease is, you know, how close together and how prolonged is that contact with other people. This disease is particularly tricky because we know it can spread if you're asymptomatic or even pre-symptomatic. So you don't know that you're about to have symptoms, but you could still spread this disease. That's why this is trickier than usual.
And then Rob also talked to someone who was happy the mandate was lifting. The person said they were unable to wear a mask because they'd had brain surgery that affected his nasal passageways. Here's a listen.
I have medical issues, and one thing that's been frustrating for me with the hospitals, the buses, the CDC clearly stated that if you have medical conditions, you're by ADA law, American with Disabilities Act law, you're exempt from the mask mandate. But go ahead and try to argue that with anybody.
Dr. Shirley, I think it's rare, but not non-existent, people with conditions that make it very difficult at best for them to wear masks.
Yeah, I think that is definitely a consideration. But like you mentioned, it's certainly not the majority, but definitely needs to be considered in these things. Another kind of example is that of that is a very small children that can't wear masks and also can't be vaccinated. So, you know, that's a tricky topic in its own right.
Is part of the story how we reach out to people and how we communicate with each other, Dr. Shirley? Maybe this is a little outside of your area, but we've had people hostilely trying to enforce mask mandates and people, you know, mocking and criticizing people who do wear masks in places. I don't know. What would you hope to see in how we interact with each other on an issue like this that really shouldn't maybe be that controversial?
Absolutely. I think it is really just a major issue. And I think that neither way is good. These kind of reactionary tones, both directions. I think it really is best to think about this as a community effort. We're talking about public health. You obviously should consider your own health, but it is super important for us to work as a group and a team to kind of decrease this spread of COVID. And really thinking about the fact that I am protecting other people.
Let's go to a caller now. Peter is with us in Rochester, Minnesota. Peter, hi.
Hey, yeah, so I am actually a research sales associate for a company, and I travel from state to state in the Midwest and kind of outside the Midwest, and I just think it's pretty ridiculous that they're getting rid of the mandate so early, you know, being that we have kind of this dwindling thing of COVID going on. You know, there are a myriad of reasons why you guys have already talked about it's important to wear a mask, and, you know, with everybody traveling and travel increasing, like, this just seems like the wrong time to be doing that.
Peter, do you fly a lot for your work in particular, or do you take other forms of non-car transportation?
Yeah, I mean, I drive and I visit people at customer sites, but I also do fly as well. So it just depends on the distance.
And do you plan on your next flight? Are you still going to keep a mask on?
Oh, I'm wearing a mask, I'm wearing gloves, I'm wearing a face shield, I'm wearing two masks, actually. Like, there is no reason why everybody shouldn't still be wearing a mask, I believe. But, you know, that's my opinion, even though it is a public health thing.
Peter, thanks a lot for that call. Peter, all in on the mask wearing. Dr. Shirley, is there, Peter's saying he's not ready to go without masks yet. Is there, Dr. Shirley, a point where you would say, okay, now, even in a tightly enclosed space like this, this is when we could say we can feel safe going mask-free?
Yeah, I think an important point here is that, you know, we've gone through different waves and surges, and there have been different mandates on masking, and we've pulled those back. And all indoors, for instance, in lots of locations has been removed. I think this is a stepwise thing based on the rates of COVID in the community. And I think the issue is just the timing. I think everyone's working towards knowing, you know, the rates are low and we can back off some of these things. Mask mandates as a whole for a whole community is tricky. But when we're talking about, you know, consistently risky, confined areas like a bus, I think that's why it's just different, is that that can be mandated and actually adhered to. And we know that's a risky situation compared to, say, a mandate for something that's less risky, where people are spread out and wearing, are able to spread out mostly, and the airflow is good.
Thanks for that call, Peter. We're talking about the recent court ruling overturning a federal mask mandate requiring masks on planes, buses, and other mass transit, plus airports. Dr. Dan Shirley stays with us, assistant professor in the Division of Infectious Disease at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your reactions, your questions. Are you or maybe someone in your family immunocompromised in some way, where you feel an extra risk of being in a place where people aren't masked, being on a plane or a bus, for example, where people aren't masked? What are your feelings on the overturning of the public transit mask mandate? Do you have kids under 5 who can't be vaccinated yet? How do you feel about this? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Dr. Dan Shirley about masks on public transportation, planes, buses, and more. A court ruling said the federal mandate ends Dan's an assistant professor in the Division of Infectious Disease at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Do you want that mandate to stay in place? Are you glad to see it gone? With or without it, do you plan to continue wearing masks if and when you go on a vehicle, flying or ground-based with other humans? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Shirley, I know people are watching for the numbers and things like that, trying to weigh, make their own decisions about health precautions. You mentioned those at-home tests. And I've heard suggestions, and you were hinting at this earlier, that maybe that's making it harder to track trends because, you know, if I take a test, it's negative, it's positive. I don't necessarily call up the city or the county or whatever and tell them about it. Is that making it harder to track the spread of COVID and the latest numbers?
Well, I do think it makes the numbers look a little bit lower, but I think the trajectory, meaning the cases seem to be going up, that seems to be true, whether we're testing fewer people or not. The other thing is we have other ways to kind of measure this. And it, for the healthcare setting, we test people before procedures who don't have symptoms, for instance. And obviously we have testing readily available for our healthcare workers. So we know kind of what the rates are related to those. And those all kind of track with what we see in the community as far as the reported numbers right now.
Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. John is with us in Two Rivers. John, hi.
Hi. Well, I'm retired, and I flew 100 flights a year for 30 years. End of June, me and my daughter's family with two grandchildren, we're going to fly to Florida to see her in-laws. And we've canceled the flights and decided to drive. We just can't take a chance with the two young kids. I have chronic conditions, and people aren't going to wear masks. We're not going to fly on an airplane.
John, thanks so much for sharing that story. Dr. Shirley, I think a lot of people may be rethinking travel plans. Some people were surprised when the announcement came on while they were literally on a plane that the rules had shifted on the way. Do you expect to see people reconsidering their travel plans now?
Yeah, I do. I mean, this is even for myself, it makes me wonder, you know, should I take this trip? I think everyone has to kind of decide how important is this. I think this relates to buses and trains even more because people must take those modes of transportation to get to their job or you know, help out with their family, those types of things. So the stakes are even higher for those other types of transportation. Obviously, people need to ride planes to visit family and do their job too, but I just think the stakes are even higher for those modes of transit for everyday use.
John, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Looking at the latest trends, the latest variants, you know, the numbers are going up. They're not skyrocketing with the new variant. What are your thoughts, Dr. Shirley, on what we're watching for here?
I think we're in a pretty good position right now, which is great as far as the timing that, you know, enough people got vaccinated and boosted, and a lot of people got Omicron during that last surge, which has left us with, you know, there are infections around and the cases are rising, but that so far hasn't resulted in hospitalization. I think the danger of having kind of ongoing transmission is something we already know about, which is new variants. And that's really what we don't want to have happen. The other question is, how long does this protection from either vaccination or infection last? You know, we might be good while everybody goes out for the summer, but what's going to happen if cases are this high, people are close together as we get back into the fall?
Let's go back to our callers now. Don is with us in Madison. Don, hello.
Yeah, hi. I guess you kind of started to hit on what I was going to bring up, but basically, you know, it seems like lately that the numbers are what are talked about. Oh, the numbers are going up. It's up 10% from this point. But what isn't, at least what I've not seen and what makes it, you know, seem to me that this is becoming more of an endemic situation as opposed to pandemic is the number of resultant deaths related to the number of infections, which people are actually being impacted by it. Like the guy that was, you know, in his mid late 70s, you know, obviously with conditions that made it serious for him. So mask wearing on a plane is prevalent to him. But, you know, for the vast majority of people that, you know, I mean, I I'll go to Woodman, say, in Madison, and I'll put a mask on because there's tons of people in there, right? So I don't want to take that risk. But I realize that if I get the virus, the likelihood is I'm going to probably just have mild flu-like symptoms, and I'm not going to have, you know, that deep respiratory the deep respiratory symptoms that was killing people, you know, a year and a half ago. So, that's what I'm saying. We're talking about the numbers, but we're not actually digging deeply into what the actual impact is. Sure. To people related to the current, you know, the Omicron or whatever the latest Omicron variant is.
Gotcha. Don, thanks for the call. And those numbers are, the case numbers are going up from what is happily a fairly low level. But Dr. Shirley, what do we know about the lethality and the harm done by the current most common variant of the virus?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's true that so far we haven't seen the hospitalizations and the severe disease. And really, that was the focus of the vaccine from the beginning. And luckily, that's also held true for Omicron, because the new subvariant is still Omicron. So people have been relatively well protected. The danger here, and why maybe our focus has shifted a little bit, is that some people don't react well to the vaccine or prior infection because of their immune system, or the stakes are just higher because of like a chronic lung condition, that if they get COVID, they will be a person that has a more severe case. So yes, those people are fewer, but it is not uncommon for people to have immune problems or medical conditions. A significant proportion of our population that has that. So I agree that there is over time been some sort of evolution of how we deal with this. And there are just more knowledge about where are the riskiest spots and when should we implement all our layers of protection.
Don, thanks for the call. Jamie joins us now in Edgerton. Jamie, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to bring up, Jamie?
I just wanted to say thank you for bringing up this conversation. And I just wanted to talk about the fact of, I am personally, my family is very happy that the mask mandate for federal public transportation has been overturned. I personally feel like it should have been a personal choice the entire time. It should have never been mandated in the first place. If you feel like for yourself, it should have been, you wanted to wear a mask, that's fine. That's up to you. But to have it been mandated this entire time, I don't feel is right. If people are vaccinated, boosted, that's your choice. And the same thing with the vaccination. That is a choice. It should never be forced upon anybody.
Jamie, thanks for the call. Thank you for calling in, Jamie. Just have a few moments left. Dr. Shirley, from the public health angle, that I think is why sometimes people are reluctant to say it's personal choice, because you're trying to stop the spread of the disease in the population. What do you think of what Jamie brought up?
Yeah, you know, this is kind of just a broad argument over time of where does public health stop and start, and when does individual freedoms or choices start? I think the issue with the public transportation is that it is public transportation. So people use it as a means to get to their job or go to the hospital or whatever. And so it's not necessarily a choice to use kind of the public facilities. And that's where, you know, that's why this is the discussion we're having right now, that this is kind of the last place where things were mandated. You know, I think it is that thought of, you know, I don't fear for myself so much as should I do something to protect the other people that might also be using that mode of transit.
Thanks for the call, Jamie. Just in our last 30 seconds, Dr. Shirley, masks do make a difference, right?
Yeah, they do. I think we know that a better mask does filter better. Having two people face each other that both have masks is better than just one or none. And, you know, there's arguments about, you know, what is the best mask for the best situation. But I think the biggest thing is something that's comfortable that you can wear, implemented in the risky situations that we're talking about.
Dr. Shirley, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us again.
No problems. Thank you.
That's Dr. Dan Shirley, assistant professor in the Division of Infectious Disease at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. He talked to us about a court ruling overturning the public transit mask mandate. Still time for you to share your thoughts. Tweet us at Central Time WPR. Start your weekdays with great conversations on The Morning Show with Kate Archer Kent. Tomorrow, supply chain issues are making baby formula harder to buy. Find out how big the problem is, what it'll take to fix it. That's tomorrow morning on the Ideas Network. Yesterday on the show, we visited our bald eagle population in Wisconsin after the news that all 72 counties in the state have confirmed active nests. Milwaukee County got us up to 100% with a nest spotted this spring. You shared some of your sightings on the air. More of you wrote in on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Scott writes, there's a pair of bald eagles that live around the intersection of Borderline Road and Highway 180 in Marinette County. Just saw them this past Sunday. Maureen says, twice in the past few months, I've seen an eagle near Phantom Lake in Maquonago. Zachary, there are a couple that frequent Monona Bay in Madison. Craig says they're everywhere in Douglas County. Marianne says Bayfield County, too. Diane writes, one nest I've watched for 7+ years came down with the tree it was in recently. I was thankful I was able to reach out on Facebook and confirm the pair is safely in a new nest, not far from the original one. Keep sharing your eagle sightings on the Ideas Network Facebook page. This is Central Time.